Welcome to the My Control Room podcast, the only podcast that features discussion, tips, and commentary on control room ergonomics, and much more. This is part one of a two-part series regarding operator fatigue. To speak more about that is User Center Design Services President Ian Nimmo.
Hello, this is Ian Nimmo with User Center Design Services. I'm president of the company. We're a human factors company focused in the manufacturing industry, and we work across several different aspects of that type of industry, from oil refining, petrochemical, through pulp and paper, electrical power, electrical transmission, gas pipeline, and pharmaceuticals. So we work the full scope of the different industries. Our focus is in control rooms, control room operators. However, we do work with operations outside, with field operators, and we cover a whole range of topics from control room design to alarm management, HMI design, workload studies, etc. Today we want to talk to you a little bit about operator fatigue. It's becoming an important issue as regulators are now taking an interest in this topic, and that's because we've had a number of incidents where fatigue has been implicated as one of the main reasons. BP Texas City incident that killed all those people again had a one of the causational factors was fatigue after working long hours during a turnaround. The operators starting up the unit were not fresh, they were fatigued. And so now we're starting to see some rules around hours of service, and again the use of overtime, especially when we've got people working continuously 18-hour shifts. It's not surprising that we have fatigue issues. 12-hour shifts are bad enough, and what we're trying to see is some limits, trying to stop the 18s and just have 14s. But again, a shortage of people often drives it to 18-hour shifts, and unfortunately sometimes it's often the same people over and over again, as some people like the overtime and other people don't like the overtime. So how do we deal with fatigue? And basically what are some of the things a company can do? They often have to trust their employees to do their part. And certainly when we had 8-hour shifts, it used to be common practice for operators to have a second job, whether they were painters or car mechanics or taxi drivers. Instead of being at home in bed, resting and being fit for work the following day, they were coming in, starting their shift fatigued because of the second job they had, and this the means of earning extra money. Operator jobs are quite well paid today, and we're on a 12-hour shift with overtime. It's not unusual for operators to be exceeding $100,000 in salary. Yet we still have people craving for more and more overtime, and don't realise the impact on their bodies and how that impacts their health. And of course we see obesity as one of the main problems with the shift workers, diabetes and other sleep related, like sleep apnea type problems. Because of the way they treat their bodies. So what a company can do, first of all, is to set some good rules in place, having a fatigue risk management system, and within that fatigue risk management system, defining the hours of service and the shift pattern and understanding the impact of the shift pattern, especially if people are working overtime, and what risk they're exposing themselves to for human error as people become more and more fatigued. So there is a way of calculating that. There's been a lot of research done in this area. And so basically the regulators, things like the DOT pipeline regulator, actually has a whole section on fatigue which is 192.631 and 195.446, sections D on fatigue mitigation. And basically the ruling says that each operator must implement the following methods to reduce the risk associated with the control of fatigue that could inhibit a controller's ability to carry out the roles and responsibilities the operator has defined. So regulators are now pushing this. Insurance companies are also starting to push it, your own insurance companies, because when we have these accidents, generally the big accidents, they're not small incidents, they're catastrophic incidents that often lead to multiple deaths. So it's a topic that's very, very important. So one of the things that the American petroleum industry, the API, has come up with is a set of recommended practices, and that's API recommended practice 755, which basically looks at several sections. And the first one is the positions in a facility covered by a fatigue risk management system, the roles and responsibilities of those covered by the fatigue risk management system, staff workload and balanced assessments, in other words, balancing workload so that one person isn't working a lot harder than another person, that you try to balance that workload out and have the right number of staff. What tends to happen is when somebody goes off sick, there isn't an extra person to jump in and take that place, so the existing operators have to backfill that position, and that means instead of them having rest days, they're working overtime and getting more fatigued. So that's important, and basically understanding what your workload is and you know, basically how it's going to be impacted by fatigue is something that they're demanding that you're aware of. And a previous podcast you can go to look up operator workload staffing. We have a methodology that has been approved in the pipeline industry for assessing operator workload. And it's a very good methodology. It doesn't work just in the pipeline industry. We've done it in the refinery, petrochemical. We've done it in the electrical utility industry, power industry, and many other industries as well, including mining. So this is something that's called for, it's something that's important, and it's something that we provide a good service around. The next topic is safety promotion, training, education and communication. It's important that you educate not only your operators on managing fatigue and about the importance of sleep and some of the techniques that can be done to actually improve the quality of the sleep of your employee. But a good company often will call the family in and educate the family around living with a shift worker and the importance of them going to sleep. It's been a common practice for many years is as you get off shift, you stay awake a bit longer and you take your kids to school and you stay up a lot longer, but what you're exposing yourself to is daylight. And that daylight is impacting your circadian rhythms. It's recommended that operators going home in daylight should wear dark glasses, again, just to eliminate that bright light in the eye that will reset their clock and make it more difficult for them to sleep. We find that operators that go straight to sleep for a good 8 hours, and operators that don't, the ones that stay up, end up just sleeping for just 5 hours. And so they have disturbed sleep. Which doesn't give them a recovery for the next shift. The next thing is communication, and we touched on that a little bit when we talked about training, but it's about an honest communication between the employee and the company, and a no-blame policy that allows the operator to highlight whether they haven't slept and that they're potentially at risk for fatigue and human error. And you know, there's many reasons why somebody misses a night's sleep. Somebody in their house was ill, a neighbour was knocking walls out, or there's major construction going on outside the house. Many reasons that may not be the fault of the employee, that has limited their ability to get their rest. And the sum total is they're coming to work not fresh. They come to work tired already and stressed, and their potential for an accident is extremely high. So understanding that, and maybe even changing that person's duties, or trying to help them understand how do they fix the problem. Sometimes an operator will come and admit that he hasn't been sleeping very well, and when we do some testing, we discover that that person's got sleep apnea, and he's constantly waking up during the night. His body's waking him up, and he's not getting his sleep. So when he gets up on a morning or a night time, he already feels as tired as he went to bed, and he hasn't basically got any rest overnight. And of course, some simple devices like a CPAP unit can dramatically improve the quality of an operator's sleep if that's the root cause of the problem. But again, only good, honest, no-blame communication between a supervisor and an employee as to their ability to get quality sleep is an important discussion that should happen, and the freedom to sort of highlight where there's problems and let the company help solve the employee's problems, and make it safe for everybody by doing that. The next area is the work environment. And again, there's lots of things in the work environment that can impact fatigue. Having the temperature, the environmental temperatures in buildings incorrect is one stressor. Having the lighting levels too low, it doesn't help the circadian rhythm, and can actually work against the operator. So if you imagine somebody's coming in on night shift and we're trying to persuade their bodies it's daytime, and we put them into a dark, very dark environment, which is basically promoting sleep, what often happens is people sleep. And, we've heard many different practices that companies have of dealing with that, people sleeping on night shift. But not many of them that's actually really addressing the true problem and the needs of people is, first of all, understanding what's going on and having that honest communication about why somebody's sleeping. One of the most dangerous aspects of sleep is what we call sleep paralysis. The person's actually sitting at a desk looking at a screen, his eyes are open, but unfortunately nothing's going in. And we've seen that many times. They're actually asleep. We've actually seen people be able to stand up and they're still asleep. There's just nothing going on in their minds. They're sleeping. We've seen people driving in the sleep. And it's a problem that we have to be aware of. So getting the environment right, the lighting, the acoustics, the temperature, the reduction of vibration in control rooms is extremely important in dealing with fatigue. I mentioned that we have ways of calculating the risk associated with fatigue. And again, there's some calculations that can be done, understanding the drive time into work, the drive time home from work. Something has to be recorded. That's something that we've never done in the past. But it adds to the drive time. We see some operators that spend an hour and a half, 2 hours driving to work. And that's obviously they're getting up an hour before that. So if you get them coming into work at 5 o'clock, they've probably got up at 2 and 3 in the morning. So you've got to be aware there's an impact of that as well. So we think about calculating that risk factor and understanding the risk index and how it works to give us information as to what we're exposing ourselves to with risk. Maybe the difference between a supervisor picking somebody for overtime and sort of saying no, that you don't qualify because you're too high a risk, and finding somebody else that's got a lower risk by looking at their risk index. And this can be calculated. Again, each shift pattern promotes a different risk index. Most people are on something like the DuPont system, 12-hour shift system, and it's the way it rotates, its patterns, its number of days on days, number of nights on nights, and then the rest periods that's in there, all go into the calculation to give you a factor, an understanding of exposure to risk. And again, sometimes if you've got a really bad shift pattern, it's worth changing that shift pattern and finding one that reduces the amount of risk exposure by operators.
Well, thank you for listening to part one of two of our two-part series regarding operator fatigue. To learn more about UCDS, Thank you for listening to part one of our two-part series on operator fatigue. To learn more about Ian and UCDS, please visit mycontrolroom.com.